and welcome to Cinemarathon, the Movie Marathons podcast, where we watch a series of movies all in one day and then talk about them afterwards. I am John, and quick couple of housekeeping things before we start. We have a website that is now live, and it is at cinemarathonpodcast.com. We also have a Facebook page if you want to add us there at facebook.com/cinemarathon. And you can follow us on Twitter at cinemarathonpod. And in addition, if you want to email us, you can email us at cinemarathon@gmail.com. We're always accepting marathon ideas and suggestions and so forth. And you can call me at my home phone, which is...
Very good.
Well, I'm not giving that out. But now that that's finally out of the way, welcome. This month, we decided upon doing the Alien and Predator universe. Consists of several films, and joining me to talk about that, we have Alexei.
Glad to be here again.
And we have Matthew.
Hello.
And we have Pat McGrath.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen.
And Stu.
Hey.
And joining us via Skype, Richard.
Hello there.
Hey, Richard, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good on the East Coast.
Excellent. Yeah, unfortunately, Richard had to fly back east, but we would dare not have you miss this wonderful podcast, so I'm glad you could join us.
Damn Yankee.
But Richard, since this marathon was your baby, do you have any sort of introduction you want to give to the Alien and Predator marathon?
Well, I don't know how much of my baby this was. I was really pushing for it because it's a nice long marathon, but I feel that the combining of the Alien and the Predator franchises was just such a odd thing. I mean, do you see that ever? I mean, when was the last time they did something like that, that they would combine two major franchises like that of semi-unrelated movies?
Yeah, I think the only thing I can even think of is the, like, Freddy versus Jason movies.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go. There's a more relevant example.
I guess.
I was just, you know, it just came to me, and I thought it would be a lot of fun to combine these two movies.
Oh, I should also preface before we start, my brother Dan, he wanted to protest the union of Alien and Predator, saying they didn't belong together. He's basically offended that Alien is so worthy of its own marathon, it shouldn't be put in, gelled in.
Yeah. by the Predator.
Exactly.
Films. When's the last time he watched Predator, the original one?
No, well, he loves that movie. I don't think he's claiming that one's bad. It's just sort of like, he said it's like a disservice to, especially Alien, I guess.
Well, we can get into the merits, I'm sure, once we get to the movies, but I have to agree that even if you like Predator is a way different movie than Alien or Aliens is. It's the tone is completely different.
But I think that's true of most of the movies in this franchise. I distinctly remember going to see Aliens versus Predator with Dan in theaters. So if he's so against it, then maybe he shouldn't have gone to see that movie.
Yeah. Call out. Not here to rebut.
Well, maybe.
Call out.
Yeah. Maybe his attitude isn't. If that movie had been good, maybe he'd be singing a different tune. But I think, you know, the Alien versus Predator movies are pretty terrible. So.
Well, I think he is right in the sense that, you know, clearly the motivation to join these two universes is purely financial, which. I mean, you're just taking two hits and saying, hey, what if we join them together? It's not, no one creatively sat down and said, oh, I know an amazing way to join these two universes from a story perspective.
Isn't there a very, like, distinct, like, subgenre in the like, comic book universe that these like, two worlds have combined?
Yes, comic books and video games.
Yeah, video. I remember,
those
like...
aren't, you know, financially motivated at all.
Well, of course not. But, I mean, any movie is, really. But, I mean, I don't think this was just a totally random, like, part on the studio.
Right.
There's a whole culture about Aliens versus Predator, like, in other, like, parts of media, so... I mean, if anything, I would say that maybe Freddy versus Jason is a less reasonable combination of franchises than this would be.
I think it's equally as, you know, ridiculous. I mean, all you did is sit down and say, hey, what if these two guys fought or these two races or creatures fought?
But the premise of Predators is that he's seeking out the baddest ass of badass aliens, humans being aliens to him, and the aliens are a perfect match.
I will agree that it probably works a little better than Freddy versus Jason, because that is literally you just, like, fucking Freddy and Jason are just suddenly in the same universe versus, you know,
but,
you can make...
You know, that movie is way more awesome than the Alien and Predator movies.
Which is nice.
The Freddy and Jason movie is, like, awesome. Like, that's not a good movie.
I don't agree with that, but that's also not saying much compared to...
But that, like, that's a fight I, like, was dying to see, I guess. Like, that's... Whereas, like, Aliens versus Predator... although I have, like, Pat, you mentioned the video games. I have really fond memories of kicking some alien ass as the Predator in the... I think they were, like, Genesis games at first, the Alien versus Predator games, and then they're still making them, I think. Like,
they just made one about a year ago. Less than a year.
Oh, really? Just came out like a year ago?
Yeah, well, they made, like, there was, like, the original set of PC games, Alien versus Predator, and then they made a second one, and then they rebooted it. So, as you know, it's hard to believe that they're even rebooting video games.
Rebooted it?
Like, there's one in production right now.
Does it really require, for movies, I get it, but, like, video games? Like, really? I think they just fight each other.
That is the point that we have come to. Yeah, we're rebooting video games.
Unfortunately,
well,
yes.
They're rebooting the entire DC Comics universe, so, I mean, this is symptomatic of every entertainment
outlet.
Anything from video games to movies, comic books.
But, yeah, definitely not. So for this marathon, we decided to watch them in order of release by year. So the marathon consists of several movies, which include Alien, Aliens, Predator, Predator 2, Alien 3, Alien Resurrection, Alien versus Predator. I guess just AVP, like that's the only title. And then Aliens versus Predator Requiem.
Yeah.
AVPR. And then finally Predators. So 9 movies in total. We hadn't done one this long in a while. And but you know, overall it was actually, I think, like, pretty easy to get through.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't do the big Bondathon like you guys did, but I didn't really, it was a little, maybe it's just cuz I didn't get a ton of sleep the night before, but a little rough in the middle, but I wasn't feeling it at the end. It wasn't a big, I probably could have watched another couple movies.
Yeah.
Not that I would have enjoyed them, but
I think it, in my mind, it helped immensely that it was sort of, I mean, these two series converged at a point, but for a while we were just like kind of flip-flopping between them. So it was nice to like watch a couple Alien movies, and then once you were kind of getting sick of Aliens, it's like, oh, Predator movies, and it was like, it had a nice like variety.
You got sick of Aliens?
Well, no, I would never get sick of Aliens, but it's more, I feel like the fatigue was sort of less because you sort of got to change subjects, and then it's like, by the time you watch two Predator movies and go back to Aliens, you're like, oh, more Aliens, yeah, I remember these, rather than just like Aliens.
I mean, hell, that might have helped Alien 3 a little bit to come off Predator 2, where you're just like, oh,
you
let's
mean
go.
The brilliant film that is Predator 2?
Yeah.
Alexia, back me up, man.
Predator 2. It is amazing in all respects. Danny Glover is a badass. That version of 1997 is brutal and hilarious, and how dare anyone say anything bad about Predator 2.
But we shouldn't
fucking suck.
We shouldn't get too ahead of ourselves now. We'll get to Predator 2. But I think let's start off with our first movie that we watched, which was, of course, Alien.
And easily the best of everything from the day. I don't think anyone would dispute that, right?
Are we pretty much unified in that?
I'm a Predator fan. I really think Predator is great. I know it's not the sort of art film that Alien is. It's got a lot more action to it. It's not that slow build, but I really enjoy Predator on a very base level, maybe, but I enjoy it a lot.
But more than Alien?
It's tough because they're very different flavors. They are apple and orange flavored, but I put it right up there. I put them both up there.
Well, yeah, I'd say between like Alien, Aliens, and Predator, like those are probably like some of the best movies of the day. Really, yeah. Like those three are like the ones I'd be like, they're the classics.
Like, I mean, for me, I grew up with Predator like on a like HBO like VHS thing that I taped off of the television. I must have watched that tape till it broke. Like, that was something I grew up with. And although I saw Alien when I was very young, it wasn't like a repeat viewing thing for me. It was like something that I grew to appreciate once I was older. And it's like, honestly, like Alien is top 10 favorite movies of all time. Like there's just almost the craft of that movie is sort of mind blowing. But as far as just like throwing on something and being entertained, I don't know, Predator might have it beat in that sense. But for me, like Alien is just top notch filmmaking.
I had kind of the opposite experience of Matthew, where Aliens and Alien I saw way, way more often. I didn't see Predator probably until I was like 16 or 17. I grew up with Alien and Aliens as the movies.
I had a similar experience to Richard, where Alien was the thing that I watched over and over and over again. And I feel like I didn't see Predator until I was in like late high school too for the first time. So I don't know, but that may have just been circumstance. It's not like I avoided Predator or anything like that. It's just Alien happened to be something that I kept going back to.
There's something about Alien where if you're going to sit down and watch Alien, I feel like I need to watch it from start to finish and I need to really devote my entire brain to it.
Yes.
Predator is clearly a different kind of movie where if you turn Predator off or on halfway through, I'm still pretty satisfied. So they are very different experiences and they affect different parts of my brain, but I still love me some motherfucking Predator. It's got chain guns. Got Jesse the Body in it. Come on.
Well, Predators also has the, not to go, I know we're supposed to be talking about Alien, but not to go too far down it, but Predator also has that kind of duality to it in the sense that the first half of the movie is completely different than the second half, in the sense you have this group, you know, action army sequence, and then you have the, you know, Predator hunting them down, and especially the last part, which is just Schwarzenegger versus the Predator. So, I mean, it feels
stick
like
it on.
It's two different movies.
But, I mean, it's interesting we're doing this because, I mean, the marathon is about Aliens versus Predator, and really, if you had to pick the best movie of both of those movies, Alien is pretty easily the best Alien movie, and then Predator is obviously the best Predator movie.
Yes.
And, Alexei, I appreciate your love of Predators, but, I mean,
I'm not going to fight and say that it's on a cinema level the best movie. Alien is a work of art.
Yeah, Predator but all around, I mean, even as my personal favorite of all the movies, I mean, Alien is easily the best one. Like, I actually had the fortunate luck of just getting to see Alien when I was very young. As I say this a lot on this podcast, so clearly my dad was a maniac and just showed me everything. But I was really lucky he sat me down through an Alien. I knew jack shit, and that movie's so awesome to watch if you have no idea like what a facehugger is and that it's going to come out of the guy's chest and all that. Like, it was awesome, and that definitely had an effect on me. And even knowing everything that's going to happen, that shit still holds up today. It's awesome.
Yes. The way that I watched Alien for the first time is when I was around like 8 years old, it came on television. It was on like ABC or something like that, which of course it would be ridiculous because they would cut everything gory and good about the sequel. But I remember my dad watching that movie on TV and telling me about how scary it was, and I wasn't allowed to watch it. Well, the thing that he didn't realize is I also had a video rental card for the video place down the street.
You're
from me.
You're 6 years old.
And you didn't...
No. Aliens came out when I was six, and it came on TV, so roughly around like 88. So I was like 8, 9 years old.
So you were 8 or 9.
So then I took the video card and went down to the video store. And I mean, like, I lived in a suburb of Rochester, New York. It's not like they're not carding me or anything. They don't care. So I just came with this thing and I looked and I didn't see Aliens. I saw Aliens. So I took that. So I was like 9 years old. And this is, I went through it, not to go through my like movie history or anything, but around nine years old.
No. Set the scene. What was the weather? Well, I want to know everything.
All I'm saying is I saw Alien, Psycho, Goodfellas. I saw all those movies when I was like 9 or 10 years old, which I think is kind of crazy.
That's
and
awesome.
I did all of those movies without my parents.
Is that why you're such a cynical asshole now?
Yeah, because when that's your formative movie experience is to see Alien, Goodfellas, and Psycho when you're 9 years old, everything else is going to
be just cash it in. Just sell your VCR and move on to oil painting.
Although, you know what I just remembered, and this might actually be kind of telling because, I mean, we'll get to it in the next movie, but Stu and I have very different opinions about Aliens. But I actually just remembered that my dad showed me Alien and Aliens on the exact same day.
Wow.
So I had this experience where they almost went sort of hand in hand. So that might be very telling as to why I'm like so beloved of Aliens and think it's so awesome, because it might just be mixed in into the same like joyous experience.
Well, but I think that's a lot of people love that movie. I am clearly in the minority in not liking the sequel, but I mean, it's a really popular. In fact, I think if you were to look it up on IMDb or something, I think it's even more popular on IMDb. Like, people love that movie.
I seem to hear the conversation more often going towards people preferring Aliens to Alien, which I don't agree with, but it does seem like we are in the minority for that, because it people like the action movie version.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah, don't they? In Scream 2, they have the big sequel talk, and they bring that up as one of the examples. But if I recall correctly, I think Randy defends Ridley Scott.
I just looked up on IMDb that Alien and Aliens have the exact same rating of 8.5.
Oh my god. Well, here, let's get into Alien a little bit. I think what I love so much about Alien is this. Like, Ridley Scott's other awesome movie, Blade Runner, is a lot like this, too, where it's just, like, every frame of the movie is, like, a wonder to behold, and it's so interesting, and, like, I've never seen a movie that solid from, like, just every shot. It's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I mean, I kind of wish they had used a little more CG, though. Like, that probably would have looked a lot better, right?
It's clearly one of those sci-fi children of 2001. It has that feel and that approach to it where, like you were saying, John, everything is just methodically done and shot and designed. And I think that's why, I mean, I don't know this for a fact, but I would say that, you know, this is probably the first one to really go horrific places in the sci-fi genre in this style. You know, we after 2001, you see sci-fi go into places like, you know, I know it's more fantasy, but Star Wars and Star Trek and that type of thing. So you get that type of sci-fi. But then this is the one that says, you know, we're going to branch sci-fi and horror, but it does it in a 2001 approach. And I love the beginning, too, because the beginning not only has that kind of slow, methodical pace, but it kind of matches because they're all coming out of sleep, out of hypersleep. Hypersleep, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, that
sounds
right.
So you have this, I don't know, it's shot almost like waking, and they're waking, and the audience is kind of like slowly being pushed into this universe, yes. And it felt like a perfect match, both tonally and, you know, story-wise.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I'm always really curious about, like, how much credit is attributed to the director himself, because, like, Blade Runner and Alien, like, basically being directed back-to-back, like, really blows my mind, just, like, because what you were talking about, the technical aspects of this film is, like, it's near perfect. Like, there's almost no criticism that I could have of how this movie looks or how, like, the special effects are executed. And I wonder, is that really Ridley Scott, or is it the creative team that he had behind him? Because, like, after he does these two movies, I kind of couldn't give a shit about Ridley Scott for the next, like, 25 years. So I'm kind of wondering, like, was it really, like, Ridley's doing, like, at least I know on some level, or was it more the creative team that he had back
in? Yeah. Well, it's almost like if it is him, like, what happened?
Exactly.
Where did it go? And if it's not him, then, like, okay, now who's to credit?
Yeah, who gets it? Because both Alien and Blade Runner look fucking phenomenal. And then after that, even though he goes away from genre, his movies become kind of tepid. They're, like, not particularly interesting looking, like, I don't know.
We looked it up, and there's two different cinematographers for both those movies.
Yeah,
So it's not like some genius cinematographer that, like, isn't getting credit. Like,
well, at least I'm talking about, like, with, like, set design, all of that type of stuff. I mean, I guess Legend, you could say, is equally, like, intricate. But
right.
The script just isn't as good.
You can make an argument for when you look at what he starts doing in his filmography as it goes along, as you start seeing things like Black Rain, and, like, I think he started off, the first movie he does is The Duelist, which is a period piece, and then he does, you know, huge set piece movies like Alien, Blade Runner, Legend, and all of that. And after that, I feel like maybe he just scaled back and said, you know, I want to do a cop thriller, right, and all that. And if you've actually seen, have you ever seen Black Rain?
Yes. When I was very young.
It's not a good movie, but it's shot in a very meticulous way, the same way Alien and Blade Runner are shot. It is not a good movie, in my opinion, in any way. But when you're watching it, I feel like Ridley Scott is behind the camera. And so it's the same thing with some of the more recent movies. You know, you get a sense that there's a director with a creative mind behind the camera, but for whatever reason he's doing this movie, like, I don't know, Matchstick Men or Gladiator or something like that. It's kind of like, oh, there's creative force there, but the story and the script that he's chosen to work on are just not good.
Blade Runner wasn't a huge financial success to begin with. That's a cult movie, and I don't know what the success of Alien is or Aliens versus that, et cetera, et cetera, but maybe that has something to do with it, that if you put all of this time and energy into production and it's not well received, you start to scale it back. and you just do whatever you gotta do.
Yeah, I mean, it could certainly be something like that. It could also be just creatively, he wants to do something different. Yeah. You do a couple of sci-fi movies and then a fantasy movie, and you're like, well, I want to do something in the real world.
And now he's back to redoing Alien, and he's going to do Blade Runner.
Oh, wow.
We should talk about this whole Prometheus thing a little bit. I mean, we don't have to go into it, because obviously it's like, who knows what's going on with that. But it's interesting that as we're recording this podcast, just literally a few days ago, there was an article about Ridley Scott going back into the Blade Runner universe as well. Like,
yeah, the deal is signed. He's going to do, I believe, a prequel again, but regardless, something very much in the Blade Runner universe.
Deckard is apparently not in it.
Well, yeah.
At least that's a rumor.
Is it just going to be Tyrell just making robots and being like, this is awesome, and like that's it? Or
they're going to totally ruin it because they're going to show, like, spoil the twist of Blade Runner. They're going to show, like, a robot Deckard being built at the end.
Oh, so like the ambiguity will be gone of like
Naked Arnold in that Terminator.
Just as long as we get to see spaceships on fire off the shoulder of Orion, that's all I care about.
Now we can never do that Blade Runner marathon of just viewing every different cut. That
So say you. Let's fucking do it, man. So if we're talking about the first Alien movie, I feel like we should mention H.R. Geiger, concept artist or designer of the Alien, really?
So I read all about this while we were watching it in between movies, on how he got involved with a couple of these movies. And I believe that what I took from it was while he was working on the never seen version of Dune that he was contracted to work on, that's where he met someone involved in the Alien movies who brought him on after the entire concept of the alien that rapes human beings had already existed. So that script had been written.
It was Dan O'Bannon.
Ridley Scott was involved in it, and Dan O'Bannon knew Geiger, and he said, oh, there's this one piece of art that looks really cool. If we did an alien similar to that, it would be really great. But they were in such a time crunch, and Ridley Scott was such a fan of that one piece of art, which is famous and has a name that I do not know, but it basically looks exactly like the alien.
Right, it's like
Alien.
The first drawing of that.
Yeah,
alien.
So Ridley Scott said, no, fuck it, we're in a crunch, that's the alien, like, go. So once that had happened, the studio said, this looks disgusting, but they made it work, and here we are.
Can you imagine, I mean, if they had made them change to some, like, crappy looking puppet alien or something. Instead, they go with this really, really cool design.
Luckily, it's a genre film, so, you know, maybe they thought we can go with this wacky Swiss dude and his pervy dick face alien.
Much of that design makes the movie awesome,
right?
Like, it's just that look, that thing. I mean, it truly feels like, I mean, this is cliche to say, but it truly feels like Alien. Like, I'd never seen anything like that. I've never seen a creature design like really almost before or since look like that.
Well, I think, I mean, it's perfect that the alien design in this movie is so phallic, considering it's a movie about, like, aliens that rape people.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it all kind of, it's one of those happenstance things, you know, where it's like, oh, Dan O'Bannon caught wind of Geiger and was interested in it, and, like, it just matched,
you
know?
It's like the stars aligned.
Yeah.
And here comes this awesome movie.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because if you replace this alien with practically any other alien design, like, this movie could... is a total shit fest.
Wait, what about the Super 8 alien, you guys? That would be really funny.
But, I mean, the thing that's interesting about it is, you know, not to take anything away from the writer or anything, but when you think about it, like you guys are saying, the thing that stands out the most about Alien is the design of the creature. And then following behind that is just the way Ridley Scott shoots that film in terms of every shot is, you know, immaculate, and the pacing is all really, really well handled. And so you're like, okay, so you've got this amazing creature design and a great, and like, what did the writer really bring to it? I mean, it's just
Stu, you're gonna deny this man his credit?
There would have been no movie if there was no script, which existed before Ridley Scott was involved.
I'm not trying to take away anything from
Dick.
I'm a writer.
Have the writer here. He's in the other room. He's gonna come in and
I'm gonna go kick him in the balls.
I'd like to see that because he's dead.
I dug him off.
Get a shovel.
I'm not trying to take anything away from it. I'm just saying that when I look at the contributions to what make Alien a great film, the script is not the first thing that jumps to mind. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'd like to step in for the script a little bit myself, if I may, because the script is written in such a way that it is an ensemble drama. where not one character steps in the forefront and takes control of the story away from the audience, so that everybody is on the same playing field. And it is such a surprise, but by the end, that Ellen Ripley is the one who ends up surviving. That any one of them could have gotten bumped off. And
right, it's almost like there's nothing special about her. She just was right. The last to maybe get
She's
killed.
The last
like,
man standing. Yeah, mm-hmm. And so
last woman standing.
Last woman
with a Y.
Seeing the characters all interact with waking up, look like you were saying there, they're all. They all clearly have this working relationship together, and not even a lot of the dialogue really stands out, which is fascinating. That they're not pushing a lot of what you would call exposition and out at us. It's just them chatting until things start to happen.
Well, the most quotable thing in the whole movie is like the one sheet poster tagline. Like everyone talks about Alien, they're like, "In space, no one can hear you scream." Like no one says that in the movie.
No one does not.
Yeah, there's not some awesome one-liner in the movie. You're totally right. It's like just normal, like everyday life.
Yeah.
Doesn't Ripley have her like something about bitch line or
well,
something?
Well, that's the second movie.
Oh, no is that the second movie? I thought that was in both.
No. Stay away from her, you bitch. Is the second movie.
And bitch is also she's referring to the queen, which doesn't come. Yeah. During, so you don't know. She doesn't know what the hell is in the first movie.
I believe what Matthew is talking about is when Ripley's trying to reset the self-destruct and not go off. And then she calls. She tells mother, "Mother, I turned the cooling units back on." She goes, "You bitch!"
Right. Oh, see?
Okay. All right.
But that's not like the
most
the,
important the, line of the whole franchise.
The quotable bitch line from the Alien series is clearly the second movie. But I can understand that, like, yeah, because I don't think people say like, "Oh, that great scene where she was cursing mother out." It's just more like, but it was a memorable part, certainly.
I think something that I noticed while watching this movie and actually watching the franchise with you guys in general was that. Certain assumptions I had about like the alien design and alien creature in general were probably more a product of the expanded universe than what I thought was just natural mythology. Like the whole idea that when the alien inhabits or like, you know, ingests its eggs into like whatever creature that it's in, that it automatically takes genetic traits of that creature. And I thought that was assumed, but you, like John said, that maybe that was something that got expanded upon later. Even though there's no like direct evidence for it in the first movie, I think it was Alien 3 where that actually first came up.
Right, yeah, because we got this. Well, I have a memory of when there were aliens toys. They had like a bull alien and like a this like all. But I always just saw that as a way to like sell a bunch of different toys. But that it's interesting that it's open ended because I had always just my personal interpretation was always just the aliens like that's what they look like after they hatch out of you know whatever they come out of.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously somewhere along the way, you know, it became more like it takes on animal form of whatever it hatched out of. But you're totally right in that like it looks humanoid. It could be human. Yeah. I think it's sort of open and it is. You can take it however you want.
And I think there's a really interesting like photograph that I forgot who found it. Maybe it was my friend Josh who came to the marathon. But that there is a set photo of the actual suit that was used in the film, and it's really hard to see in the movies because of the lighting and like all the atmosphere. But the dome on the alien head is actually partly translucent in the actual model, like in the actual suit. And you can see a humanoid skull structure behind the dark dome.
Yeah, you show me that.
Like, there's like
really cool.
You can actually see like eye sockets and a nose, like socket. So it's like, at least in the original design, there was some concept of like genetic crossover.
Yeah.
But I don't think it was really expanded upon until 3, and then later confirmed in 4 with all the madness that happens in that movie.
Right. Well, I've got a picture for you from the 4th movie.
Yeah, Richard, you want to say something?
To me, that the fact that it does attack animals, and then the facehuggers do it ingest into animals, adds a lot more tension in the later movies, especially Aliens, in that you know it's a whole colony where they probably have livestock. So, you know, it's not just people. It can go get into anything and let's just repopulate out of anything.
I think that it needs to be mentioned that, like, I don't know exactly how famous all of these people were, like, when that movie came out, because I just don't have a good sense of, like, that time period and how many movies they had done. But this is a monster cast.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's, like, stacked.
For a movie that only has 7 people in it, like, it is some of the, like, heaviest hitters, at least as far as, like, quality acting. I love Yaphet Kotto. Like I know his like career went up and down, and he did some like pretty B-list
went
stuff.
Went all the way up to the ceiling as he blew up in Live and Let Die.
Oh yeah, quality performance. But I mean, honestly, as a character actor, like I really, really connect with him in this movie. Like just the whole like the comedy that he brings to it, and his relationship with Harry Dean Stanton, and I don't know. And then Ian Holm is the android. Like, who the fuck saw that coming?
He's awesome. That's incredibly well handled. You know, and that's actually a testament to the script. Like, that type of stuff you don't see coming.
Yeah, like, it's not even mentioned that he's a robot until all of a sudden he's, like, blood everywhere.
Or that there are robots. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it catches you completely off guard.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we love about sci-fi, is that we have the opportunity to exist in this space that has real true surprises that we can't possibly predict because we don't have all of the rules.
Right. Yeah, and I would love to bring up the ending. I think the ending is something that needs to be, you know, discussed a little bit, or at least mentioned. And just the fact that I don't know at that point in movies if the ending is something that you can see coming.
We think it's dead, and then
nowadays it's pretty standard that when, you know, you think something's dead, you know, it's not. It's going to come back, and you're going to get that final scare. But, you know, there's an element of, especially with the methodical pace of this movie, that after she separates from the main ship, that you're kind of like, okay, you know, she got out. This is the end. Now, nowadays, even if you're watching it for the first time, you would probably expect it to be like, okay, where's the alien? But back in 79, I have a feeling that might not have been the case. And the reveal of it is kind of brilliant because it's blending in with the rest of the ship. Right. And then I think
see it for like a solid 30 seconds before you even know it's there.
Before you know it's there. And then what I think is kind of hilarious in a moment of, I guess, a little bit of levity in the, you know, the tense moments of this film is the fact that it's kind of funny because it's sleeping. It's sleeping. So you get the yawning or whatever the hell that, you know, right. its little
with
head
its
comes
double
out
mouth.
Like, and you're just like, what's going on? Oh, it's asleep. It's, I don't know. There's a realization about that. And I think that follows through the pattern of the entire film of how you recognize the way the alien works and the way, because you know you don't know what the face hugger is, and then you figure out what it's doing and you're like, okay, so it hugged its face, and then it's like, oh, and it bursts out of its chest, and now there's a new, so you're kind of piecing together the way this thing acts as a, you know, a biological life form. And I love little details like that at the end. That's great.
I think that's like a real testament to actually the quality of the screenwriting. I don't know, have you ever heard of that screenwriting book Save the Cat?
Yes.
Which is like apparently like a big deal. I don't know a whole lot about it, but a friend of mine was talking to me at work about it and said that the actual title of that book was inspired by the author of the book, Saw Alien. And basically it was like, this is like what you do in order to basically gain empathy for like a lead character. And it's like a whole book about screenwriting was based off this idea that like Jonesy the cat, like,
oh yeah,
which
my girlfriend's favorite character.
And
the
I
way,
think
I need to mention,
and I think it actually is like a big part of that movie. Like, well, first of all, the cat comes back, which I think is hilarious, but like Jonesy is a big part of the way that film is structured as far as like connecting with the character. And honestly, I'm, I think, like, alone in the universe when I think that saving that cat was the dumbest fucking idea on the planet. I was like, you have a giant fucking alien that's going to kill you. Like, that Jonesy's fucking dead. Like, I would not go after the cat. But I can see why, as, like, an audience, that's, like, a necessary part of the screenplay.
You can make an argument that the, you know, it's not only something that connects with the audience, but saving that cat is something that someone would want to do. If, you know, if I'm right, when she saves a cat, everybody else is dead, right?
Yes.
Oh, so that's her way of grabbing on the only other living thing that she wants to live. you know, she doesn't want to be alone. I mean, just imagine being in space. Like, I mean, I hate to reference Castaway here, but the whole like thing with him and the ball, you know, creating something.
Wilson!
Yeah, exactly. No! But I mean, but as silly and stupid as that can be and is handled, there is a, you know, a psychological truth to that of, you know, human wanting something else alive that they can feel so they're not alone.
Guys, it's confession time. Who cried when Wilson got lost?
I cried out.
Sorry to bring
Castaway. I've actually never seen it. So.
No,
sorry,
right.
Sorry to bring Castaway to the discussion.
Oh, it's okay.
Spoiler for you, Matthew.
To touch on what Stu was saying about Jonesy, how would we feel about Ripley if she was running through the hallways and came across the cat and then just did say, fuck you, I'm out of here. We would have a lot less...
I'd say she's a fucking genius if she did that.
Speaking as Matthew's DM, Matthew's many times murdered innocent civilians in the name of what was best for him.
And so, if you don't know what DM means, it's Dungeon Master in D&D. I'm not actually murdering people.
I may or may not be starting another podcast about Dungeons & Dragons.
I also wanted to go back to like that final moment where the alien is on the escape pod. And, you know, because the whole movie was set up to that moment with the production design of the spaceship, where you get used to all these smooth, rounded, cushiony-looking objects and pipes along the walls that you just become accustomed to it. So when you see it on the escape pod, you don't really think anything of it until you realize that it's the alien's cranium. at the end, because you're just desensitized to those shapes on this ship.
Yeah, you're right. It helps you've seen it the entire film, so you're just not even thinking about it.
And I think that moving into Aliens, that sort of becoming desensitized to all these twists and turns and revelations is part of the reason why I prefer the first over the second one, because everything from in the first movie, the cyborg's drive to retain the life of the alien to bring it back on at the behest of the scientific company he works for, which that line of reasoning becomes almost hilarious as it becomes beaten into you through the next three movies.
Yeah.
Or even into the second movie.
What are you talking about? It's so subtle.
Even into the second movie where you have to get Bill motherfucking Paxton, who wants to nuke everybody. That movie isn't as clever to me or as dark and dangerous as the first movie is. And that cyborg and what he represents is a real intellectual need to fight between the unknown and your desire to discover it, and then the personal safety of the people on the ship. That's real in the first one, and I think that sense of emotional reality starts to drain as soon as you get into Aliens.
Yes, which now obviously we will go into Aliens. Which, I understand what you're saying. Obviously, it's not as good a movie as the first one. But I think it's so fascinating that it takes such a dramatic, like, genre change. Like, there's not that many series that will go from, you know, moody, dark, sci-fi, 2001-esque sort of thing to just, like, balls to the wall, bullets are flying, like, Marines committing suicide, ass kicking it. Like, I can think
of one that has the same director, which is James Cameron's Terminator.
Yeah,
because,
and it's no mistake.
Well, no, what
it's,
I
it
well,
is
but it starts that way. What I mean is, like, well, it, this the genre com- it completely changes genre
I,
between
I,
movies. Like,
I agree with
that's what that's
with Alien. It kind of completely changes genre, but though Terminator does have some things in common, the first movie is much more of a it's much more of like a horror movie. In a way, it's kind of like, you know, granted, there's all the sci-fi elements and I'm not, you know, discounting those. But the first Terminator is much more of a stalker, a killer chasing this one woman. And yeah, there's action pieces to it. But
I think that was by necessity.
And that's fine. But the second one, I mean, that's the James Cameron Aliens, balls out, special effects, huge action set pieces. It's a different type of movie than the first.
And you would feel like Arnold Schwarzenegger would fit into Aliens. He wouldn't fit into Alien. Like,
correct.
That, nothing could be more oil and water than Arnold Schwarzenegger traipsing around the ship in Alien.
Absolutely,
but if you added him to Aliens, it would feel fairly natural. And I don't think it's a mistake that when James Cameron had movies to shape in the future, not just one or two, but more, he puts Arnold Schwarzenegger in them because he's a big fan of that style, that bigger person, bigger personality.
Yeah,
he puts him in True Lies later on, which isn't even a crazy ass action movie along the lines of a Terminator or Terminator 2.
That is a little bit.
It's an action movie and he's a spy, but how many government spooks are actually 300-pound Mr. Universe jacked up lunatics? Like, that doesn't actually make any sense. It makes sense in Terminator.
Right.
2.
Well, because it goes from, like, reality logic. Because the beautiful thing about Alien is you almost buy, like, that this could actually really happen.
There's nothing false to me about
it. Yeah, aside from it being in the future and obviously having sci-fi elements, like, really, it's done with the utmost seriousness as if it's real. And obviously, Aliens crosses the line of, like, this is no longer reality. This is pure fantasy, fiction, like, popcorn fun movie.
Well, I think what Alexei was saying about, like, the reality of the first movie and the nature of once you start throwing in, like, oh, you got a shit ton of aliens and now it's an action movie and it's about bullets flying. It was like, I can only equate it to how I felt when I watched the first Matrix movie and how, like, threatened I was by Agent Smith. Like, there was one of him, and I couldn't be more like, oh my god, this is the end all. How the fuck are we going to defeat him? And then you cut to the second movie, and all of a sudden there's like 8,000 Agent Smiths, and I couldn't give a shit about him after that.
Well, okay. But to be fair, I actually think going from, obviously, it doesn't have the same effect in terms of a horror movie. Like, I'm not professing aliens to be superior. But I actually think having a bunch of aliens and fighting them is a really interesting way to go. And I think it's highly entertaining. I think the Agent Smith thing sucks ass because it's one character who you know is a character and all of a sudden there's 100. Like, it's just garbage.
Yeah, I'm
but
not.
Like, a bunch of aliens I think are cool.
I'm not saying that Aliens is a bad movie because it's. I actually am sort of like neutral on it. It's like, it's sort of like, yeah, it's a fun like
I
action
think it's
ride.
Fucking awesome, dude.
but I mean, just from the sense of like when I sit down and watch Alien, like there is a gravitas to it that like when I'm like, oh my god, this one alien could get to Earth and fuck everybody up. And it's like, there's just like a real threat there. To me, when I see aliens, it's like, okay, now they're just these things that are cannon fodder for how many bullets and grenades. You know what I mean? Like, there's not that feeling that,
really?
Like, you're overwhelmed.
Dude, when they got their little scanner and there's, like, 100 of them and they're coming out of the walls and stuff, I find that pretty threatening and terrifying.
It seems funny to me that you, John, said that the first time you ever saw these movies, you saw them back-to-back. Because watching them back-to-back this time... The symbol for me is the alien blood, and there's the scene in Alien where it drips blood, and they follow that blood through like 5 layers of ship as it tears through the ship, and it really sets up the danger that lies within going after these aliens. And then in the movie Aliens, it's the same aliens, the same blood, and they do touch on the fact that it has acid blood, but at some point they are ripping up so many aliens that I'm thinking to myself, like,
right.
Where is the enormous bloody hole in
right.
this ship?
Yeah.
Like, there's so much blood spilled, by its very nature, it should be tearing apart the innards of this ship. And James Cameron touches on the acid blood like once or twice, but for the most part, he's just like, fuck it, blow him up. Like,
right.
Let's just get.
But that, to me, that's just the transition to like, now it's an action.
Sure, it is
movie.
An action flick, but
it's like,
an action
it's convenient
flick
for the movie that it's we're not having to constantly worry about
it. It's convenient, but I would call that convenience dumbness. It's dumber. It's a dumber movie.
Oh, yeah,
I
would
agree.
For sure.
Well, and it's, to me, it's like you get a symbol of what you're, you know, you get a sign of what you're in for right off the bat, which is the like, bad dream take, the cheap trick of, you know, the false dream right at the top. I mean, I almost forgot about that, to be honest. And I'm watching, I'm just like, oh, God, did we really just start this movie with a fucking, oh, it was a dream? And I mean,
I
know,
you know,
it's short,
it's
but
not
it's,
that bad.
It's,
like,
it's,
really.
Don't get me wrong. It's not the worst dream take I've ever seen in my life, but it just gives you a sense of...
It's no Jurassic Park 3, let's put it
that way. Greatest.
Alan! Wake up!
This is the type of thing that I feel like sets the mood and sets the tone for what Alexei's talking about. Of like, he just wants to affect you. He just wants it to be like, oh, I didn't see that coming, and oh, there's going to be huge aliens, and it's just like everything is escalated instead of stopping to think about the story. And that's the one thing that Ridley Scott does really well in the first movie is he really plots it out well in terms of the pacing and everything. This just feels like, how can we do more? How can we make it bigger? And how can I freak you out or scare you or trick you? And it doesn't feel like a story as much anymore as it feels like a constant onslaught.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Paxton. Can we talk about Bill Paxton?
John's favorite part of the movie?
Part of that
fucking
movie.
Plus. Bill Paxton in this movie is so awesome. I'm legit awesome. Like, I'm laughing my ass off every time I watch it. His whole, like, game over, man. Yeah. Oh, that's just great. Like, the most, like, it's all done and he's just sad, like. I don't know
what's
why anyone doesn't like it.
What's the line that he has where, like, it's like they're trying to figure out who's going to go out, like, you know, out there?
He's like, it's not going to be me, man.
Yeah, no fucking
way. Oh, no,
way.
Or someone volunteers, and he's like, yeah, you should go. Like, you know,
I heard
such a total pussy, like, doesn't want
to
do anything.
I wanted to talk about one of the scenes that Bill Paxton had was cut out of this cut that we watched. Because I think it's important to note that we watched the theatrical cuts of these and not the would-be director's cuts. Or extended versions of these movies. But Bill Paxton has a cocktail-esque scene where he's rhyming all the different weapons that are on the dropship in a weird attempt to hit on and comfort Ripley as they're going down to the surface. It's just really bizarre.
Oh, wow. I've never seen that.
Oh, it's a good one.
Well, I've heard that I came across something quite by accident like a week ago after we watched this. And there was some like montage that someone had put together of, you know, the best improv scenes in movie history. And it was just a, you know, clip on YouTube of like 20 different movies.
Oh, and but it's known that they just sort of made
this,
it up.
This scene, your favorite line was in there. Now, I have no idea the authority of the person who put this together, but the whole like game over, like that was, according to this person, one of, you know,
I believe
improv
it.
Scene,
that makes sense.
Which, you know.
Well, it definitely has the flavor of, you know, like another famously improv scene, like at the end of Scream, all that stuff that, what's his name?
That Stu says.
Yeah, that Stu says. But what the actor's
Matthew
name?
Matthew Lillard.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, all that stuff Matthew Lillard too. And it's actually really similar of like, my mom's going to be so mad at me. And all this just like hammy, bad improv trash that's like amazingly funny. Like, yeah, it's kind of similar.
I was under the understanding that all James Cameron ever writes is enter helicopter with giant gun. And that all dialogue in his movies is essentially either taken from kids' cartoons or improvised.
Well, I mean, clearly when you're watching Avatar, you get that sense. Oh, I know, dances with wolves, and here's some special effects.
Yeah.
Pocahontas.
I have to say, I was reading an interview with Michael Biehn recently, and this was a recent interview. He was talking about Aliens, and he said that the particular scene where the character Newt is looking at some of the weaponry on the table, and she reaches her hand out to grab a gun or maybe a grenade or even just touch it, and Hicks stops her from touching it. The scripted line was "Don't touch." It was his decision as an actor to say, "Don't touch it, honey. It's dangerous." To explain as more of a father figure instead of just saying "Don't touch." In any other way, he decided
to be a little more kind.
Yeah, be much more kind to her, and that reflects so much more on his character. Where so we can say it's his input that made Hicks the more sensitive of the group. Almost.
Can I bring up something interesting about Newt that I found? I think we briefly talked about this during the movie.
Yeah.
I find this, and I guess you guys didn't find it anywhere near as unique or interesting as I did, but in a big movie like this movie was really, really successful, really popular. The girl who played Newt never did anything ever again. And I don't mean, oh, she was in some crappy television series or direct-to-video. Never. You look her up on IMDb, except for like a special on Alien, which I'm sure she either was just in a clip of or something like that. She never acted again in a credited. And I just find that not that a child actor never acts again. I'm sure that happens all the time. But a child actor that's in such a big, popular, you know, film, I find very strange
Stu, I think I can solve the mystery for you. Newt fucking sucked. That's why she's never in a movie.
John.
I love this movie. I think it's great. I was really surprised. I thought she was a terrible child actress. Every line was like, "This way, Ripley." Like, it was awful.
She was in shock.
No, yeah, but well,
give her some credit.
But the two things about that though is that one, we had a whole debate over, we know that James Cameron has a notorious short temper.
Right.
The rumors around Hollywood, blah, 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 is that
probably
he is
traumatized her.
Yeah. So, and she's young. I mean, what is she, probably like 8?
Yeah.
Something like that. So to have someone like, and we don't know that he screamed at her or did anything, but you know, you could potentially see
I
it.
Do. I know he screamed at her.
But the thing is though, still, I have to dispute what you're saying though, John, because fine, she's not good, but she's in this incredibly popular, successful film. I find it really, really difficult to believe that she was never cast in anything. You can look at child actors who do poor jobs in really crappy movies,
right,
who are still in other crappy movies or other television shows. She's never in anything
ever again. I just attributed it to like times have changed a little bit. Like, I feel like nowadays, absolutely, because people are looking at any face that was in a big movie, let's put them in 20 more movies, here we go, doesn't matter if you're 2 or 100, like, we're gonna cram it down your throat. But I feel like at that time, in like the mid 80s or whatever, like, I don't think it was as much a focus as like I don't think people were as savvy at the time. Like, I don't think movie going audiences would be like, yeah, Newt, I know her from Aliens, I gotta go see what's happening in the barnyard or like whatever stupid movie they put her in. Like, I feel like it just didn't matter. And like you said, if her parents didn't want her to be in movies anymore because James Cameron, like, destroyed her soul.
Yeah.
I can see that as well. If we're talking about aliens, we absolutely have to talk about the big mech queen showdown scene, which, as much as I'm making fun of this movie, or as you guys are making fun of this movie being, like, kind of stupid and dumb fun, I will say the movie's totally retarded and, like, a good fun time. But I think the one moment in the movie where it actually gets, like, legitimately good is the whole, once they have, you show the alien queen and they have that big fight, like, that is the best thing in the whole movie, and I think it really stands up well.
That's cool.
Well, I think I really am, in even by today's standards, am super impressed by the mech suit. Like,
yeah.
I mean, what is that, styrofoam or something? I don't know, but this shit looks real. Like, I pretty
It was
much,
a functioning mech.
I would have to assume so. Like, considering James Cameron's insanity, like, he probably did build that shit and walks around his house, like, picking his garden with it or something. Like,
he thought it was so good he reused it in Avatar.
Yeah, but with CG and it looked like ass. I don't know. As far as I'm concerned, Aliens, I agree with you, John, that the mech suit is the best part of that whole movie. Because it's just
just the suit, even the battle with the alien.
Yeah,
queen
the battle.
And all that. Yeah.
But just as a technical thing, like, I'm so impressed by that suit, and I just wish that the time and effort that Cameron spent on the technical aspects of his movies, he would start spending on the actual character aspects of his movies.
Yeah, I mean,
because
that's...
I mean, with the except, well, there's a few exceptions, like The Abyss. I think is pretty fantastic.
I love
and,
this.
And like Terminator,
the Terminator, has yeah, and Terminator and Terminator 2 are great.
Yeah, have like their moments, but every other movie that guy's made, I feel like it's such a hack job covered in like melted gold. It's like, well, if you just make it look shiny and good, it's like you try and to ignore all the bullshit that's like you're listening to. Well, I don't know.
You could make the argument that the reason that Terminator is any good is because he ripped off Harlan Ellison, so much so that Harlan Ellison successfully sued him. So that now he has to give credit to Harlan Ellison.
Who is Harlan Ellison?
Science fiction author.
You don't know who Harlan Ellison is.
I don't know who Harlan Ellison
is. He's a very popular science fiction writer, and he wrote episodes of Outer Limits in the 50s and 60s. Maybe not 50s, but 60s.
Did he write the one about the killer tumbleweed?
I have no idea. Probably
that,
not.
You should watch Echoes of Silence, Killer Tumbleweed. It's amazing. Watch it.
But the point is one of the movies that you just pointed out was basically he stole the – or not stole the story.
Well,
but
just the concept.
So much so that he didn't even give credit to someone that he was influenced by. Strongly, too, because it's basically he took a hybrid of two Outer Limits episodes that Harlan Ellison wrote.
Right.
And created Terminator out of them. And Harlan Ellison is like, these are – and if you watch those episodes, it's fucking eerie, man. And
well,
like,
I honestly, like, if he stole that idea from Harlan Ellison, then he should start stealing other ideas, like, because his other movies, like, what's going on with, like, his other movies? Because Avatar, like, was obviously Pocahontas, but it was still a shit script.
Right.
But Terminator wasn't a shit script. That's a good movie.
At the end of the day, if we do a Terminator podcast, which I think we should at some point, that would be awesome. We can probably continue this debate. I like Terminator. I think it's great. But really, it's like James Cameron, he only did one Alien movie. So we'll talk about this one.
No, I mean, but I'm just talking about the testament to, like, we were talking about Ridley Scott, like, the quality of, like, his character. I think Cameron falls short on that in most of his projects, and I think it's reflected here.
I agree that what you get out of what's lacking in Aliens is something that Alexei pointed out earlier, which is that you lose some of the characterization of the first one. A lot of the kind of reveals of what the alien is. It's no longer about the biology or the characters in this interesting situation. It is now in the pursuit of death, explosions, violence.
The few exceptions in the movie is I'll completely agree. Most of the people are pretty one-dimensional characters and not a lot of depth. But I actually do think they do a really good job with the character of Bishop. In terms of taking this idea of, like, oh, okay, the robot guy was a bad guy in the first movie. You know, Ripley's going to have problems with robots. Like, why don't we have a really nice, awesome robot guy that she doesn't trust? And he's probably, aside from Bill Paxton, who I just think is funny, he's probably one of the more memorable characters. And he so much so that he even continues on into the Alien series. And the Alien versus Predator series. But, yeah, I loved Bishop in that movie. I think he's probably
my favorite
guy. Yeah, and that whole knife scene I really like, where he's playing, like, five-finger filet with Bill Paxton and stuff.
I didn't like the sped-up nature of that. I think that looked silly, personally. And I know why they did it. They did it because they had to do it really slowly. But, Alexei, was it you who was pointing out that the fact that the way they shot it is that if you're going to shoot it like that, then you can't have other people moving in the
background.
Yeah,
it looks like everyone in the background who's sort of sitting still but not really is sped up to 150 times, which obviously
yeah.
they were.
Unfortunately, I didn't notice. I was doing this crazy thing called keeping my eyes on, you know, what I was supposed to be watching. I wasn't watching background people. And what. But I'm sure you're right. But
Ridley Scott
wouldn't
have framed it that way.
Oh, it's so true.
Yeah, but to be fair, you want to talk about technical stuff. This is going back a bit, but I literally only have one complaint in the entire film of Alien, which is the world's worst like jump cut.
Yeah.
When you go from
the head on the table.
Yeah, yeah. It's what's the his name? Ash. Yeah.
Yeah, Ian Holm.
There, and it's weird because you see coverage in a moment later of people looking at him. So I don't know why they didn't just like cut to the people and cut back. Like
yeah, and there's a decent shot of Ripley, you know, just in general looking at the head mm-hmm. as she's talking to it without talking, so just kind of reacting. I'm sure yeah. that you could go into that footage and, you know, just cut to her looking at the head, and then you can cut back
yeah,
so you don't
really
get that
weird.
Awkward.
Next
cut,
week but... on the editor's roundtable discussion, we'll be
hey,
looking
hey,
at...
you guys started it.
Well,
so
I do love that, you know, the editor at the table is the one who points out that weakness, and, you know, the writers are pointing out the
weakness. Right, right. I think my overall point is just sort of like, hey, even something as awesome as Alien has flaws.
Absolutely.
So to, like, fillet aliens for this, like, ramp-up speed effect is like, you know, like, it's not that big a deal. Like,
it broke the movie.
Yeah, I was done as soon as that.
Excellent. Did anybody else have anything on about aliens before we move on?
Oh, well, I did want to say that this is the first movie of the Aliens movies where they bring up the kind of makeshift name for the alien themselves, and that's they call them the Xenomorph.
Oh, right.
It's the unofficial like creature. I guess I'm trying to look up right now what an actual xenomorph is.
And they never really use it again.
It's like very interesting that they, you know, they've never had a name for it, you know, cause like the Predator, you know, that's not really his name either. It's just the name of the movie, and Alien right. is just the name of that movie. They're both aliens and they're both predators.
Right. Frankenstein is actually the doctor and not the monster that he created.
That's true. Right.
It's interesting that they try to assign a name to it that kind of became the name, the unofficial name for the alien creature from those franchises.
Well, maybe James Cameron feels the need to come up with stupid names for things in all his movies. Like, was it Unobtainium? And so maybe Xenomorph is his Unobtainium of aliens.
And I don't know. I think, have we really talked about Ripley? Like, I feel like we've kind of overshadowed, like, her as a main character.
We have. I mean, we talked about in the first movie how she's sort of just one of the passengers, and she sort of takes over the movie. But, she's good.
Yeah, like, she's a feminist icon in cinema. I mean, that is not typical, especially in an action movie. I mean, in a horror movie, you can have the, you know, the virgin girl
who survives.
Yeah, it's
insanely typical in a horror movie.
But it's not. And I know Alien is, you know, a horror sci-fi hybrid, but she is an icon in cinema when it comes to strong female characters.
When she gets down to her skivvies, it's really great. I wanted to point that out. And I also
thanks for undercutting.
And I also want to point out that James Cameron basically... I always assumed that he just fell so deeply in love with that character that he started putting her in his other movies. Not Sigourney Weaver, but Ripley.
Right.
And it makes sense because she is a great character, and like we discussed from the first movie, she sneaks up on you with how awesome of a character she is.
Yeah.
But then they drag her through the fucking dirt in Alien Resurrection or whatever.
Well,
we'll get to this. That one.
Right.
Oh God, what a piece of shit. Anyway. we should move on. Finally, we get to the next part of our AVP franchise. We have the movie Predator. Which is fucking awesome.
I love the Predator theme music. It's incredible.
Yeah.
I love the militaristic drum percussion sound. It's
really everything fun. About that movie is awesome. Awesome.
You know, I have
awesome.
To be the voice of dissent, unfortunately, but, you know, this is going to be a theme with me, I guess.
That's fine.
With your whole life.
Yeah.
Not liking things that are awesome.
Yeah, that's me. Okay. What works for me is the second half of this movie. And I don't want to jump over the first part because I know you guys really enjoy the beginning. But the beginning to me is really no different than all of the complaints that we just voiced, save John, for Aliens.
But it's self-aware.
I don't know. To me, being self-aware doesn't excuse that it's still silly, over the top, and not that interesting. I mean, it's just... Yeah, there's some cheesy lines and fun moments for you know, the action-loving crowd.
Stu, you see, he throws a knife at a man, and then he utters the word stick around, which is funny because he just stuck him with the same very knife he threw.
The second half of the movie rewards specifically you, because it takes all of these characters, builds them into cartoons, and then eviscerates them.
But it's I'm not actually talking about that part of it. I guess if you want to divide the movie into thirds then, not halves, because I am literally talking once Arnold is the only one left and he's no longer speaking. I mean, basically once the movie just becomes a game of cat and mouse, I'm into it from beginning to end. I love that part of it. It's that's well handled. That's John McTiernan doing good action like he does in Die Hard. But the rest of it to me is just I really could leave it. I could do with a 20-minute short film about Predator and it would be awesome.
I don't know. For me, like, I don't know. I guess, again, it's a testament to that I grew up with Predator. I watched it over and over again. But, like, even seeing it now, I feel like when we watch doing this marathon, the first half of Aliens, like, we were not particularly invested. Like, we were talking a lot. Like, we were like, oh, man, like, when is the actual, like, good action stuff going to come? The first half of Predator, to me, is really interesting. I mean, the cast of characters that they set for, like, laid out for you are some of the most iconic to me of 80s action movies. Like, we have the guy that's blacker than black, like, whatever
Bill
that
Duke.
Bill Duke. Like, he is a fantastic character. And the whole, like, Apollo Creed, like, Carl Weathers, like, character in this, like, and their relationship with Arnie, like, it's the most testosterone, like, 80s iconic imagery for me of just, like, their arms clasping and muscles, like, there's something about that to me that stands apart from then what James Cameron did in Aliens, because to me Aliens was just this like bullets and barrage, like, oh, let's just like amp everything up. But this has like heart to it, and like Shane Black as like the joke telling like goofy guy. I mean, there's something to be said for this movie as far as character, even though I know the bullet barrage stuff, like sequences, you get bored with. Like, there's really a weight there to it, and I think that's why you care so much at the end of the movie when Arnold, like, actually survives. Like, I don't know. That's
definitely
just...
Well, I think Aliens has some of that stuff, but it's just Predator does them, like, better.
Yeah.
Way better.
Aliens has the special unit of guys who you don't really give a shit about, and then they all get murdered. And though those guys individually, none of them are on par with the individuals in Predator, who are each... so roided out and insane, Jesse the Body, etc. Even though all of those even though those guys are cartoons, I think that they avoid being the wrong kind of cartoon, which is that very boring 80s macho cartoon. They are insane. And you get a feel for the insanity that comes with being a professional badass. And I think that Predator portrays those guys in a special way of testosterone-fueled lunacy, more so than other movies that just make them all kind of mean guys or make them all bloodthirsty or make them a different kind of cartoon.
And it's, you know, Stu, I know the action scene in the beginning of this movie doesn't entertain you, but I have to say, as a fan of action scenes and movies, the Predator, like, before the Predator has even set foot in the film, this movie has the most, like, balls to the wall, completely fucking insane shoot 'em up in the jungle scene, like, in the history of cinema. I think it's like this and the Wild Bunch are like the two that come to my mind.
Really?
As like, just the most nonstop, like, dude, I've seen a lot of movies. It's fucking, it still is insane.
I recall you guys doing the Rambo podcast, Rambo, going nuts over those movies.
Well, now Rambo, especially the last movie, Rambo or Rambo 4 or whatever, that one is shocking in just how violent it is, like, in terms of the throat ripping scenes. But I, even then, I mean, yeah, I'd say Rambo 4 is up there, but like, I think I just mean the bullets per minute and just the onslaught of, like, there's not a second where there's not 20 guys dying in front of you. And it just never stops. And it's just, and literally they have that helicopter like revving up. It's almost like the whole scene's like, and it's, and it's a, just a sight to behold. And it's, and it's like they, Predator hadn't even been in the movie. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's just, it's just really well done. I mean, like, I think McTiernan, like, as we talked about in Die Hard, he just understands action. Like, and it's, I don't know, it's just like he's like really like talented, even with the stuff that may be base or maybe like not intelligent. Like, you know, it's like he can pull out a really solid action scene. And I don't know, I like, I just feel more strongly about him than I do Cameron in that sense. Mm. But
I hear what you're saying. And, you know, look, this is just chalking up to I'm completely, completely picky and I hate pretty much everything. But I mean, the difference for me is when it's easy for me to criticize this movie, I think, a little bit because of the fact that I have a frame of reference of Cameron. I don't like anything that Cameron's done. Nothing. So you can argue, oh, you're just being too picky. I literally have another movie by the same director, an action movie nonetheless, that I really like, which was Die Hard. Mm-hmm. So, and even Die Hard with a Vengeance. So it's easier for me to go, you know, those movies still had the kind of machismo and the fun lines and all of that. And it works. Whereas for me, this is too cartoony for me. I don't know what it is, but that's the beginning to me, and that's what doesn't work. Whereas when I get to the end, as soon as it's just the two of them, and part of the problem is Schwarzenegger too. I never can take him seriously. No movie that I've ever seen, like outside of the Terminator, the original Terminator, where he basically doesn't speak, I can't take him seriously in anything. He's just such a bad actor.
Could we at least agree that the line "I ain't got time to bleed" is one of the greatest pieces of screenwriting ever?
I will second
for an
that,
action
absolutely.
Movie at least. Like that is that and Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse saying "Pain don't hurt." There's no two lines that embody manliness than those two lines.
One of my favorite liners from Predator is "You fear no man. This ain't no man." I love that a lot. That's really foreboding. Definitely. And really in exciting to hear whenever I hear it.
And I think all that stuff is incredibly intentional. I mean, Stu, I know you don't like it, but it's like really it. You watch that movie and you're like, after the end of that scene, you're like, all these guys are so fucking awesome. Oh my God. They just smoked the whole village. Like, fuck yeah. You ain't got time to bleed. You love them all. You can't wait. And then like Alexei said, the Predator shows up and within like 5 minutes is just eating them for breakfast and just murdering the shit out of them. And they just have no chance. And it's
I do awesome. Appreciate what that is doing from a storytelling perspective. Cause in a way you're, and I don't know where this falls on the timeline of, you know, 80s action movies, but it is definitely atypical to take all of these testosterone imbibed characters and just eviscerate them. You know, that is not something that's done. Usually the people who are biting it in horror movies or action movies are people that you're like, okay, yeah, I can see why that person got it.
Yeah.
They deserve it or something. Like, you would not expect these badasses to get it. And I, from a storytelling perspective, I appreciate that choice. I think it's just the way that it's handled for me. Because I feel like even when they start to go down, you have this – you still have some of the cartoonish aspect to it because you have this great tension as they're starting to be hunted and they're finding bodies and they're just like, what the hell's going on? And then when I can't pinpoint exactly which deaths, but there were a couple of them where you just get like long, like, no, damn, like, oh, see, that ruins it for me because you've escalated to real good tension with these characters and then you completely subvert it by then putting in long, like, no takes.
Yeah.
Some of the deaths are like ridiculously gory to the point where they actually explode blood and guts directly at the camera. So it like runs down like a screen, like a Bill Duke's death or gets shot in the head and the blood just splatters onto the camera. And even a Jesse the Body's death where his whole rib cage just explodes out of his chest. You know, those deaths are just so over the top. It's not like he just got shot in the chest and he drops to the ground. It's almost like, you know, say cartoonish, but I was like compared to like Kill Bill kind of over the top violence,
right,
where it's just
right.
Way more than you would ever expect, and almost to the point where it's funny. It's funny and sick and twisted, and it's just totally different from Definitely. Something we've seen before.
Like when poor Carl Weathers gets his fucking arm blown off. Like whenever I see that, it's yeah, like I can't help but kind of chuckle a little bit as he's like raised up in the air and he's like, no, and, like his arms. Yeah, totally.
I think it's this really movie funny. Is more self-aware than people give it credit for. Like I think there is an underlying, like especially for an 80s movie, it's almost like to me like, he made a parody of 80s action movies while still in the 80s, almost. Because, right. like, the level of testosterone and, like, the fact that he, like you said, eviscerates them, I think is, like, really a commentary on, like, some of those 80s, like, action icons. And I don't know, like, for me, this movie is equally impressive in its sense of environment that Alien is. Because there's almost no other movie that takes place in the jungle where I feel more like I'm in the jungle.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
I completely agree with that.
Like that, like the nature of the environment is a character in this movie. And I think that's why it stands apart as an action movie of the 80s, because the nature of the environment itself is lends itself to the screenwriting.
Well, McTiernan is very, very good at that in terms of he is very good at action movies and environment. If you look at this movie or either of the Die Hard movies that he directed or even The Hunt for Red October, which I think we talked about in the Die Hard podcast, he did these three movies back to back to back. It went Predator, Die Hard, Hunt for Red October. I mean, you want to talk about, we were talking about Ridley Scott doing Alien and Blade Runner. Those are three really impressive movies to direct back to back to back. And but you know, he's got this amazing, you know, jungle set piece in Predator, and then he's got the buildings in Die Hard, and he does a really good job with that. And then the submarine in Hunt for Red October, he's really good with set pieces. And I agree with you completely, Matthew, that this – I feel like I'm in the middle of the jungle with these guys the whole time. It never feels like I'm on a fake set or on a back lot or anything. And I'm sure that – I know they did a lot of location shooting for this, but I'm sure that some of it was shot either on a soundstage or in a back lot, but it never feels like it.
Give it up to props and makeup and costume in this, because those guys are sweaty and dirty and bloody. And the whole idea of like that sort of Lord of the Flies – guy using all of these like traps and tricks in a very Rambo way should at this point in time feel much sillier than it does when Arnold is alone just doing his thing in the jungle. But it feels somehow legitimate that he's fighting this alien even after all of these jokes and explosions and blah blah blah. It just, the movie never falls apart. It's so thoroughly good right to the last round.
We should talk about our title character, the Predator. We haven't even really touched on him, but I find that
Oh, I love couldn't wait till the Predator 2. Sorry. Just
couldn't wait. Yeah, well, pussy face.
Yeah, isn't that the hilarious comparison is that you have this phallic alien and then you have, you know, the pussy of the
Yes, AVP Predator. Is a good fucking to be had by all, evidently.
All deadly.
But I there's something about the psychology of the Predator that I find amazing, because it could just come and fight and that's it. But he like is a Michael Myers stalker and like audio records people and like taunts them with their own voices and stuff.
I
like,
love that part of the
character. That's incredible. Yeah.
And I love the way it's handled too. It's just like Alien in that you kind of learn about it by watching it act and by watching it do things. You never have like Carl Weathers or Arnold Schwarzenegger sit down like, oh my God, he's doing this, and give you a fucking 5-minute exposition on what's going on.
You get a tiny bit with the woman they pick up that's like tells the legends of El Diablo del, you know, jungle or whatever.
But that's, I feel like that's really minor, and that's just kind of setting up that this thing has been here before and that they know about it. You don't get this like long exposition about how it operates.
Doesn't all she say is basically like when it gets really hot, people start dying?
Oh yeah, I don't mean to say it's bad exposition. Like
fuck you, John.
I think it's good, but you're right. No, the movie's great in like letting you learn about it on its own. Like you're right. Like you don't get a bunch of people saying what's happening. You get scenes where like, oh, the Predator's hurt, and now we're gonna chill with the Predator while he uses his little medical kit, or like looks at a scorpion and we see his hand, and like there's all these good ways that you get to learn that guy without. It's all purely visual. Like, you don't hear anything.
And someone pointed out to me, which I had never put together, I don't know, maybe because I started taking things for granted having seen it so many times, but that the Predator will always fight you on your terms.
Yeah.
Like, that if you have a giant machine gun, he's going to bring out the laser gun. If you have a knife, he's going to blade fight against you. And, like, the whole, like, ending where, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger is basically just man with fists, and like Predator like de-robes like all of his like equipment. I had never made that connection, and that is so freaking awesome, because any other action movie where you have an alien or a monster that's like outgunning you, they're just going to outgun you till you're dead. And this gives a legitimate reason why you're going to go blow for blow with something that may be stronger than you.
But again, it taps into the psychology of the Predator and why he's there. He's not there to, it's not your typical aliens have invaded Earth and they're going to kill everybody. This guy
it's
is
just
here
the hunt.
For the hunt, for the game. It's the most dangerous game. That's that classic story. Right. That's what it is. And that's what's so awesome is the reveal of that at the end. At first, you're like, oh, he's just here to kill everybody. And then you slowly start to realize all of the things you just said, Matthew.
He's collecting trophies. And it's also smart from a screenwriting standpoint, because it gives them an excuse to show the Predator in several different modes with a perfect excuse. Like, oh, well, he's got guns and he's got knives and he's got the heat vision and he's got the sound recording, but he uses them all only when they're appropriate for the story and never elsewhere.
And the world's best camouflage. Let's not forget that. His fucking like Inviso suit. I never ever thought about it when I was a kid watching that movie, but that movie's in like, we were trying to talk about how did they do that? And we all just sort of assumed it was like early computer imagery. But it looks awesome.
It still looks great. I have no idea how they do it still, and it's still awesome.
I think they had a cloaking device that they just fucking use.
I would assume, and I'm just guessing here, that what they did is they shot scenes with the Predator character there, and then they just took the same footage and then were able to kind of like composite onto like the jungle behind him, like shot the same thing without him there, and then they just put it over him.
It's like an overlay or something.
I'm guessing, that's what it looks like to me, but it does. It looks great.
The head of special effects for this was Stan Winston, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for the creature effects, yeah.
And he also did Aliens, right?
He did, yeah.
Well, he did Alien. Wait, did he do Alien?
He did, because the big Aliens. Queen battle with the mechs and the queen, yeah, that's Stan Winston as well.
Oh, okay, so the head of special effects for both of these franchises was the genius Stan Winston. There's a reason right there to combine the franchises. This is like the mind of Stan Winston, like, I don't know, it's just, these series feel very connected.
Well, it's incredible to me that you watch Alien and Aliens and Predator, and I know, like, here we go again, because we say this every fucking podcast, but they look better. They look so much better than AVPR or whatever bullshit, or like all the animated ones look like shit, and these are all like practical Stan Winston effects. Predator takes off the Predator mask, like, dude, that's the best looking alien thing in a movie like I've ever seen. Like, fuck, the Super 8, like, CG monster guy. Like, just get Stan Winston on the case. It looks amazing. And I know, I'm sorry. We should rename the podcast, like, Practical over CG.
Stan Winston did not work on Alien.
Right.
So he was not there at the beginning of this. So he doesn't, I know we reference Geiger and everything like that, but he comes in during Aliens and after that, but he is not there for the original.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I figured. Yeah.
Oh, I know what I wanted to bring up.
Yeah,
the original casting of the Predator, the guy in the suit.
Oh, right, right.
The original casting for the Predator was Jean-Claude Van Damme. He was going to be the guy in the suit, obviously not.
But you said he like bitched and moaned about the heat or something.
I don't know if he bitched and moaned. It might be a legitimate legitimate complaint, but he was apparently, I think they started shooting with him and it was just like, it was too clumsy and it was way too hot in the suit for him to do what he does.
Kick-ass.
So, yeah, well, it's I don't think he's meant to be, oh, let's put a guy in the suit. They wanted the Predator, from what I read, to be kind of like a martial arts type of expert. And so he's like, I can't, it's too hot.
So he was meant to be a little more like kung fu movie.
A little bit. I don't know how martial arts it got, but definitely there was an influence there. And so I just find that interesting to go all the way back to 86, 88 or whatever this movie was. And to know that it was originally intended to be Jean-Claude Van Damme versus Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That's an interesting thought, because it makes sense if you're like, okay, we have the ultimate Predator and he's so badass. Like, why wouldn't he be the best hand-to-hand guy ever? But in the end of the day, I think it works fine the way it is. I mean, a guy hunting a deer doesn't, run up and like kung fu kick a deer.
And they do go hand-to-hand briefly.
Yeah. But I like the way they have it in the movie, because he's a little more like brute force kind of. He's a little slower. It's more strength than, like, agility.
And isn't Jean-Claude Van Damme, like, really short? like that, like how does that work? Like yeah, how does that suit work?
They can. That's all tricks.
It's impossible. Yeah, it's impossible.
Just think about Tom Cruise, man. No, Tom Cruise impossible. Is incredibly short. He doesn't look short in most of the movies you see him in.
I was just going to point out that a lot of stuntmen are actually very short. There's just something about martial arts that goes along hand in hand with short people coordination.
Well, the only reason I even brought it up was because isn't Arnie quite tall?
I assume. I mean, he's a gigantic man.
Yeah, so I was like, it'd just be weird to me to have like JCVD, who's this like sort of short guy, like, because I love that at the end of the movie, it's like Arnie, this massive dude versus Predator, this massive, you know what I mean? It's like, it's a very tete-a-tete.
Well, you got to think that mask adds at least like a few inches to the to your height.
All right, well, that is going to do it for part one of the Alien vs. Predator Cinemarathon. Tune in a few weeks when we post part two up. Also, in the meantime, if you'd like to email us, you can email us at cinemarathon@gmail.com. And also look for us on Facebook at facebook.com/cinemarathon. Or you can follow us on Twitter at cinemarathonpod, that's cinemarathonpod on Twitter. And all this information can be found on our website, which is cinemarathonpodcast.com. So stay tuned, part two will be up soon, and we will see you then. Have a good one.